Welcome in to the 48 Minutes podcast on Bleav, presented by Bet Online. I'm Ross Geiger, the former NBA video coordinator, having spent time with the Bucks, Suns, and Knicks. And I'm joined alongside Bruce Bernstein, our four-time Emmy Award winner, who spent more than three decades at ESPN producing NBA shows, SportsCenter, and soaking up knowledge from the best hoop analysts in the business. And we're also joined by two-time Emmy Award winner, Michael Worldby Freer, who is a senior stat writer at Stat Factor, specializing in writing advanced statistical NBA reports for various announcers across the league. This is episode number 100. That's right. We've hit the century mark. And this, of course, is the Wilt Chamberlain episode, as the Big Dipper remains the only player ever to score 100 points in an NBA game. Now, before we get to our playoff talk here tonight, just a quick reminder, BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, to NBA and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet online, where the game starts. And Bruce, I think it's only appropriate we start with your Boston Celtics here tonight, as they just concluded their Game 4 victory over the Miami Heat, moving their series 3-1 in favor of your Celtics. Obviously, a very interesting box score there, so I'll let you take it from here and tell me your thoughts on tonight's game.
Well, you know, in hockey, they do the three stars at the end of every game. Tonight, the three stars were Derek White, White. Guy was unbelievable. I mean, you know, in the first half, he just absolutely opened a can on those guys. And, you know, after game two, when Boston lost and they gave up all those threes, they kind of got their mojo back in game three by really dropping the hammer on Miami's, you know, from a defensive standpoint. And then in game four on Monday night, they did the same thing. I know Stan Van Gundy spent a whole lot of the game kind of, you know, saying, hey, you know, where's the defensive effort from these guys? It's not like it was before. But, you know, when you look at the final score, Boston gave him 88 points, okay? They gave him 84. So, look, I mean, I don't know exactly what they need to do to impress Stan Van Gundy. I mean, look, Bam Adebayo had a really good game, you know. Tyler Hero was decent, and that was it. Nobody else got anything. So, I had predicted five games before the series began. I'm not super confident in it because Boston doesn't seem to, you know, handle success well. So they've playing at home, they don't seem as good in the playoffs. So they're going to have to, you know, suck it up and, you know, get it done in front of the home crowd on Wednesday night, which I expect that they will.
Yeah, and I think they should definitely have that in the back of their mind to get the job done at home in the big game five. Because as we know, Bruce, as playoffs go along, you really don't want to have to regret playing extra games and obviously having to put the toll on your body for those extra minutes, as those could come in handy, especially with a team like Boston. I understand, you know, they've got their young guns as the stars there, but the pace they play at times, moving up and down the floor, and especially when it comes to Kristaps Porzingis, who obviously all Celtics fans have their fingers crossed he can stay healthy because he's a pivotal piece. I think it's just important that they keep their eyes on the prize here, close this one back out at home in five games. And tonight, I think there's got to be a pat on the back for Derek White, because this certainly seemed to be the Derek White game. I mean, just looking quick here at the box score, 38 points in 40 minutes. It doesn't get much more efficient than that. What did you see from him here tonight?
Well, look, I mean, Derek White is one of those guys that he's like a warm glass of milk and a chocolate chip cookie before bedtime. He just gives you like this comfort. When you see the ball in his hands, it's sort of like a calming feeling. He rarely makes a poor decision. he's a, you know, lockdown defender. I mean, you know, I think, you know, he had three block shots tonight, you know, in addition to all the other.
Yeah.
And I think I saw a stat on Turner's game that said he had the most block shots of any player in the NBA, 6'6" and shorter. And so, I mean, if he's not first team all defense, then they might as well just kind of, you know, shut that award down. And I also thought that, you know, again, with so many weapons on that team, a lot of times Derek White, you know, gets these wide open looks. And like a lot of guys, you know, he's capable. And once the first one or two go down, he's off and running. And I think you saw that on Monday night. I mean, he was like one heat check bucket after another.
Yeah, we sure did. And back to those Derek White blocks there, Bruce. He had three of them, and there were no more accounted for on the Boston Celtics side on Monday night. So impressive stat there by one of your wardens, Derek White. So my last question for you, Bruce, is just this. I mean, do you see this series being any different had Jimmy Butler been available for the Heat?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and Terry Rozier as well. I mean, look, Boston totally caught a break with those two guys not playing. I mean, look, Jimmy Butler, you know, while he's not the guy, you know, I mean, look, I don't think he's the player he was a couple of years ago. But here's the thing about Jimmy Butler. He gets more respect from officials than just about any guy in the NBA. I mean, for some reason, that guy lives at the foul line. So he's the kind of guy who his numbers aren't the whole story because he will get your guys in foul trouble. You know, he'll get guys down sitting on the bench and not playing as many minutes. And that's sort of a, you know, when you get so many calls, you know, and the guys guarding him are generally going to be the Jaylen Browns of the world or the, you know, Jason Tatums of the world. So, yeah, I mean, look, Boston definitely caught a break with those two, you know, guys not being in there. But listen, you got to give Miami all the credit in the world, because look, it could have been real easy for them to just kind of say, ah, you know what, you know, we're not supposed to win, but those guys keep working. I mean, look, Bam Adebayo is a freaking warrior, man. He never stops playing. And while I think he's a borderline dirty at times because he moves on every screen, but again, he gets all kinds of, you know, respect from the officials. They don't call moving screens on him like they do in a lot of other guys, but look, if he's been able to establish that part of his game and he's able to do that, more power to him. I mean, you know, and we know Spoelstra's a great coach. So, look, but it's not like Boston's going to roll those guys on Wednesday night. That is going to be a gritty game, and they're going to have to dig deep because Miami, again, Miami's looking at it like, okay, if we get this game on Wednesday, we're back on serve.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, if Miami wins game five, I mean, game six definitely gets very interesting back on Miami's home turf. So certainly need to take care of business if you're a Celtics fan, and would agree with you that, of course, with Jimmy Butler and Scary Terry being out for Miami, they caught a little bit of a break. But, you know, when you're the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, that's sometimes the luxury that you get there. So let's move this over to talking about a team that caught no breaks and probably didn't even deserve one. But the sun has set in Phoenix as the Minnesota Timberwolves quickly sweep the Suns in four games. Bruce, obviously, before this series started, we had discussed on our podcast kind of just predicting how this one would go. If I remember correctly, you actually had the Suns. So I'm curious to get your reaction to just the fact that it was four and done for Phoenix.
Well, you're absolutely right. I had the Suns winning it in six games. I think I gave Minnesota not enough credit and Phoenix too much credit. I mean, look, I was looking at Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, thinking, all right, they played very well in the second half of the season. I mean, I think since Christmas, they were playing like 670 ball, something like that. I mean, they were winning two out of three games since Christmas. So I thought, okay, they're riding a wave. They ended up with 49 wins. Granted, they were seven behind Minnesota. But you know what? I was flat out wrong. I mean, look, I wasn't feeling super great about that prediction, but I thought, you know what? I want to pick an upset in the first round. So that's one that I want to pick. And I could not have been more wrong. I mean, Minnesota was, I mean, I expected way more from the Suns. Their defense was abysmal. They're dead last in points allowed. The Wolves barely broke a sweat Ross. What did you think about your hometown Suns and their effort or lack thereof?
I mean, definitely lack thereof. Quite the surprise. I mean, if you would have told me at the beginning of the season or even the beginning of the playoffs, the Suns would be the first team eliminated from this year's NBA playoffs, I would have called you crazy. But wasn't shocked after I saw the first two games, even then being in Minnesota and the so-called momentum moving back to Phoenix with a chance to defend your home court. I mean, the size just disrupted the Phoenix Suns so much. Minnesota has that great size advantage, and they even pointed it out in the post-game presser last night. Anthony Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns were on the podium talking about heading into the series, gearing up for round one. They knew that size would be to their advantage, and Karl-Anthony Towns became one of the pivotal pieces in that actually working. And yeah, the Suns' defensive effort wasn't there, but Karl-Anthony Towns having a pretty good series. As much flack as he gets, I thought he did an exceptional job contributing to this team. And one thing that I took from surprise, not sure if you noticed it in the game action that you watched, but Anthony Edwards and everyone else down the line on Minnesota, they were moving the basketball. I mean, obviously, Ant was getting his buckets, but the ball movement was superb.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, Anthony Edwards does a little bit of everything. I mean, I would say without a doubt, he's one of the top three performers in the playoffs so far. I mean, Jalen Brunson, who we're going to talk about in a little bit, has been amazing. I think Nikola Jokic has just been unbelievable, even though he's not getting the kind of, you know, shine that some of these other guys are getting because it's so expected out of him. But Ant, I mean, he's had three great games in that series and one kind of ordinary game, but he's been a force in the series, and it's more than just him. Yeah, he averaged 31, but I mean, they've got six guys averaging in double figures, you know, all five of their starters, I believe. And, you know, look, he was the single biggest weapon in that series. But, you know, Ross, I don't want to ask you this question. I think right when we first started doing this podcast in December of 2022, it was still sort of a question. Did Minnesota give up too much to get Rudy Gobert? Because they gave up a lot for a guy that was sort of an aging guy. And some of us were like, what are they doing? They've got Karl-Anthony Towns. Why did they do this? But what's your take? I mean, are we all looking back on that one now and saying they must have known something?
Yeah, I think we definitely need to swallow our words there because, you know, what they essentially did was realize that Karl-Anthony Towns wasn't going to be the true dependable five-man for that team. And he has done an exceptional job over the course of Gobert's arrival, kind of adapting to that and kind of being more of a floor spacer, a guy that's definitely improved his ball handling ability. We saw him put it on the floor quite a bit, not to the level of even like a Naz Reid, but he'll put it on the floor one to two dribbles and really use that size advantage on smaller defenders, which he did quite a bit of in this series against Phoenix. And it's going to be real interesting, Bruce. The next thing I wanted to talk about was, of course, who might be next for Minnesota, and that is the Denver Nuggets. And I mean, just a very early look at this, I mean, Anthony Davis is giving some of the Nuggets problems and definitely challenging the Joker down low. They're going to have a variety of different bigs to throw out at him. And I don't think it's crazy at this point to say, hey, LeBron James is obviously LeBron James, but there might be a mini LeBron James in Anthony Edwards. Am I crazy?
I'm not quite sure where you were going with that because it sounded like you were almost saying the Lakers are going to shock the world and come back and beat
Denver. No. I'm just saying that there are – I mean, the Minnesota Timberwolves are a much better team. They got so much more depth than the Lakers. But LeBron and AD alone have made this, you know, somewhat of an interesting series so far.
That's what you're saying.
So now you bring in a more firepower team with guys that kind of have some of the same tendencies as a LeBron or Anthony Davis with his length and shot blocking ability. Are we up for something that could be a really testy series?
Well, we'll bring in World B on this one too, but that series, if it's Denver and Minnesota, that's going to be a rock fight. Okay. Yeah. They're going to be like throwing like big punches, not literally, but big punches at each other. Yeah. World, what's your take on a Nuggets Wolves matchup?
I think it'd be outstanding. Once again, we're talking about Minnesota, the best defensive team in the league by far. So, they've been outstanding, and they were outstanding in the first two games at home in this series with Phoenix. They held Phoenix under a point per possession in each game. And the Nuggets, as much as they've had this lead, they haven't shot the ball all that great the way we're accustomed to seeing Denver teams shoot it. So, let's assume, we'll never want to assume, but let's assume they get by this series of the Lakers and don't become the first team in NBA history to blow a 3-0 lead. They have to really improve their shooting in order to, I think, to get out of this series. It's not a walk for Denver.
Not at all. And we saw the exceptional and elite defensive rotations of the Minnesota Timberwolves that certainly affected the guard play of both Bradley Beal and Devin Booker. That's going to be very interesting to see, especially as Jamal Murray, he's dealing with some calf injury right now, was a game time decision heading into Monday night's game. Last I checked, he is reported to play. We'll probably check on that game later, but they better hope he's healthy, because Reggie Jackson is not going to be the guy that's going to help lead that ball club against such a great defense, like you said, will be.
He's Mr. October, not Mr. May.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way,
yeah.
Murray's not exactly shooting the lights out here. I know he has a signature moment of this series and maybe the playoffs with that fadeaway game winner to beat the Lakers. Other than that game, he hasn't shot the ball well from the perimeter. He's really struggled. So there's another guy that has to step it up, along with a lot of guys on that team. But he and Jokic are the chief offensive threats there.
No question. And you talked about a signature moment there with Jamal Murray. Let's go ahead and slide on over and talk about a signature player in this year's playoffs, and that is Jalen Brunson and his New York Knicks, as they continue to roll up 3-1 against the Philadelphia 76ers. World B, obviously it was a nice finish to your weekend. I didn't even have to ask you when we hopped on here. I know that you were feeling pretty good, but what's your big takeaway from seeing 2 games against Philadelphia on the road?
Really what we've seen from the Knicks all season, basically. They're not the best offensive team, despite having a guy as great as Jalen Brunson. They grind it out. They grit it out. And they absolutely have destroyed the 76ers on the boards. I mean, this looks like the Cavaliers first-round series from a season ago, when they shot the ball poorly in that series, and they controlled the offensive glass and really got really dominated the offensive glass and got their second-chance point. They've almost doubled Philadelphia in second chance points. It's 77-39 in second chance points in this series. Now, the Knicks are number one in offensive rebounding during the regular season. This isn't a big surprise, but the way they're doing it, they absolutely have just destroyed the Philadelphia. I think and to make up for the fact that they have shot, like I said, poorly in 3 out of 4 games.
Yeah.
You know what the Knicks remind me of when the way they relentlessly battle you every step of the way. It's like if you're a boxing fan, some boxers go for the head. Other boxers keep pounding you in the ribs, and then eventually you drop your hands, and then you're susceptible to the knockout punch. The Knicks are a team that keeps battering you in the ribs, relentlessly pounding the boards. I mean, yesterday and on Sunday, Anunoby and Josh Hart both had 17 rebounds, okay? That's pretty much unheard of. Hart had 5 offensive rebounds. I don't even think he scored a point, but he was a huge factor in the game. The Knicks were +6 in offensive rebounds, +10 overall. They're just more aggressive. I mean, they're definitely, they're pounding the Sixers' ribs, and Sixers are going to be dropping their hands in that next game and say goodnight.
Wow. So you have the series over in 6?
5.
Or 5. 5, I'm sorry. 5.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think?
I mean, it's hard. If you're a Philly fan, it's hard to like the way things went on Sunday. Yeah. I mean, especially – and Bruce, we were all texting over the weekend, and Bruce brought up a good point about Joel Embiid, how he's just completely gassed in the fourth quarter. And Bruce is right. because, you know, they're plus 34 when he's on the court. He's only sat for 32 minutes in this series, and they're minus 38 in those 32 minutes. They just have no offense when he's off the court. And now when he's on the court, in the fourth quarter of the three losses in this series for the 76ers, he scored 12 points, one rebound in three losses in the fourth quarter. And he's 2 for 16 from the field and 0 for 7 from three-point range. He had this unbelievable game to get them to win in game three. And other than that, he doesn't have it. First of all, he's playing on one leg. We know that. And he's got the other issues to deal with. So you wish he was healthy just from a competitive standpoint to see how great he is. But yeah, he just doesn't have much in the tank left come fourth quarter in these games.
I have a question for Coach Russ here, okay? We're all big Nick Nurse admirers, right? We all think the guy's a great coach, and he is a great coach. But as ineffective as Paul Reed was, shouldn't he have at least been out there for a few minutes to give Joel Embiid, have him play fewer than 44 minutes? And another guy who's on the side of a milk carton at this point is Buddy Hield. Yeah. Why'd they even get the guy? I mean, he's done nothing. He's not even getting any minutes. It's like, you know, he can at least make a three. And look, if he makes one, he might make four.
Yeah, Russ? No, it's a little mind-boggling, but the little I know about Nick Nurse, I do know that he does at times have a reputation of being pretty stubborn with some of his rotations or game plans, and that sure seems to be the case here with these two guys. But yeah, the 44 minutes for Embiid I thought was a little too much, especially since this is a seven-game series. And Paul Reed, he was a guy that, of course, they weren't winning a lot of those games without Embiid, but he was a pivotal player on that team in his absence and did have his fair share of good moments. And he is a guy that's capable of playing rotational minutes. So I'm right there with you, Bruce. That was a head-scratching decision not to give Paul Reed, or as Philly fans like to call him, Basketball Paul, some more minutes. So I'm in agreement with you on that. And I do have to say, you did ask me about the series. For some reason, my gut is telling me this goes back to Philly, but I don't know why.
It could if the Knicks can't shoot any better. I mean, look how, you know, let's say what it was. Look how lucky they were, how fortunate they were to get out of game two, down five with 30 seconds to go, and you come away with the win, and in, you know, your controversial fashion, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, these series are ridiculously tight. One game, what happens in our LA series that we just mentioned with the Nuggets if the Lakers pull out that game two win, and now it's 2-2 instead of 3-1 or 0-3. So it's just these little things. I can totally see it. Philly's got to step up their game. They really have to step up their game. And I don't know if they have the personnel to step up outside of Maxey and MD to do it, but I could see if the Knicks can't shoot any better.
Yeah, no question. And, speaking of big things, little things, let's focus on big things here. And there's certainly some big things missing from the Milwaukee Bucks. This point, it's been a torturous playoffs experience for all Bucks fans, as they, of course, have been without Giannis. And in the last game, they were without Damian Lillard here. So the Bucks head into Tuesday night on the brink of elimination. They are down 3-1 against the Indiana Pacers. Of course, that tough game three really, you know, was the one that they had to win. Chris Middleton gave him a chance on multiple occasions, keeping him in it with some unbelievable makes in clutch spots, but couldn't get it done. And Bruce, I'll start with you on this one. Do you have any good news for me?
Yeah, I mean, Bobby Portis needs a brain transplant. I mean, I don't know what he was thinking, getting himself tossed out of a game, messing around with a little runt like Andrew Nembhard. I mean, you know, you don't punch below your weight like that. I mean, what a stupid way to get ejected from a game. Look, I feel horrible for Chris Middleton. He has absolutely overachieved. He's carried those guys. He's played with heart. He's played both ends of the court. It's such a what might have been, because if Dame and Giannis were doing their thing and Chris Middleton was even 2/3 as good as he's been without them, this thing could be 3-1 in the other direction. I feel horrible for Bucks Nation. I feel bad for you, Ross, because I know you love the team. It's a shame. I'm happy for Rick Carlisle. I'm a big admirer of his. We used to work together. I think he's a great coach. We're seeing peak Miles Turner, as far as I'm concerned. He's never played better than I've seen him play in this series.
Totally agree.
But it's a shame. And, you know, Bobby Portis, you know, you gotta be better than that, World B.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question about it. That was, I don't think anybody would dispute that. His teammates mentioned in post game that his emotions got the better of him at the worst possible time. You know, you were so shorthanded, and then you know they needed him, and it really shorthanded them in that game. This is a series I think could go back to Indiana for game six. I'm not counting the Bucks out yet. They're undermanned. I wouldn't expect at this point. I wouldn't expect Lillard or Giannis to play going forward. If they do, great, but I can't imagine they're 100% no matter what. I don't trust Indiana's defense. They've gotten off to great starts in the first half, the last three games. They've really shot out of the gate and really taken it to Milwaukee. And Milwaukee has to step up their game. Middleton, as Bruce mentioned, has been awesome. He's been awesome late, too. His best shooting of the series has come in the fourth quarter in overtime. So if you can keep it close, you have a go-to guy to, you know, kind of pull the game out. It's getting to that fourth quarter is going to be key for them. Milwaukee has to step up their defense. It's tough with a team like Indiana. Here's one thing we talk about. Indiana is playing at the Bucks' pace. The Bucks like to slow it down. The possession for 48 minutes, all that stuff, that is way in Milwaukee's favor in this series, and Indiana's still blowing the doors off offensively. That's a bit of a concern, but they're playing the way Milwaukee wants them to play. They just have to execute a little bit better. And here's another game, like Ross said, could be 2-2 right now, if not for that overtime.
Yeah, that was the game they needed there. Hoping the Bucks have one last fight in the tank here as they try to defend their home court. I think that Bucks energy at home could certainly play a big factor. And it's really just the last like 10 minutes of the game. I mean, even in the last game without Lillard, I mean, they kept it close. They were within striking distance midway through the third quarter. And then just the wheels fell off and that was that. And going back to Miles Turner, obviously I don't want to take anything away from him. He is playing outstanding basketball, but if Giannis was in this series, I guarantee you that wouldn't be happening. Giannis has a full highlight. I could put together a 3-minute highlight tape of Giannis just destroying Miles Turner over the years. So he's thanking his lucky stars that the Greek freak is not ready for action. And you know what? Credit to him. He's taking advantage of the situation.
And so is Siakam, too, because the way Miles Turner's played, it's opened things up inside a little bit more for Siakam, who also would have to contend with the Greek freak. So this is a little bit of a shades of the Miami-Boston thing, you know. No Butler and Rozier, no Giannis and Lillard. It's hard to make up the talent gap when two such huge guys aren't in there.
Here's something real quick on India. You mentioned Siakam. He had a great first two games, 34-plus in both games or whatever. He didn't look all that impressive in the games in Indiana. His numbers were not great. He missed all seven of his three-point attempts. He only shot, his effective field goal percentage was just 42%. That's way below where you want him to be. And just 15.5 points. I mean, so let's see what he does in game. For whatever reason, he's played better in Milwaukee. But let's see how he does away from home in this series, because, you figure they're going to need him in Milwaukee.
Now, as we get to our second half here, let's go ahead and take a look at the most competitive first-round series. And we're going to start with the game on NBA TV tomorrow night. Bruce, do you have any guess what team two teams we're going to be discussing?
Let me think. Orlando and Cleveland.
Ding, ding, ding. You are correct. That series is squared at two games apiece. And I'll start with you with the Orlando Magic. Of course, they had a big weekend themselves defending their home court to get this one back tied up 2-2 after finding themselves down 0-2 during the first two games in Cleveland. So have the Magic continued this moment, you know, have they built up enough momentum at home to pull out a road win in game five?
I think they have, because Cleveland's not showing me anything. Even in their wins, their offense hasn't been great. So, yep. I mentioned last week we were talking about this series, and I said, if Orlando doesn't pick it up offensively, this is going to be a sweep. Well, they picked it up offensively in a huge way. The crowds down here were absolutely fantastic, and they really got it going. They had Banchero in game three that went for 30 with just without a turnover, too. That was impressive. And on Sunday, they had Franz Wagner go for 34, I believe, in really an impressive offensive output. So I think they have enough momentum. This reminds me, nobody would remember this except me, I'm a Hornets fan too, of 2016, the last time the Hornets made the playoffs. They played Miami Heat when Dwayne Wade was on his last go around there. They lost the first two games in Miami, went back to Charlotte, won the two games pretty handily in Charlotte, came down to Miami for game five and stole a game with a late basket and had a chance on a Friday night to win it in Charlotte and eliminate the Heat, and Miami got it done. Dwayne Wade came through big time, and then in game seven, Miami blew the doors off. This has that feel of that kind of series where if Cleveland doesn't pick up their offense, yeah, Orlando can come in there and absolutely pull out a win.
You know, you're so right about Cleveland's offense. I mean, they're only scoring 91.3 points a game, which is the only team scoring fewer points per game in the playoffs is New Orleans at just under 90. And here's a kind of a strange number for this series. The home teams are 4-0. The road teams are 0-4. Okay, no big whoop there. But no road team has scored more than 89 points in any game of this series, okay? The Cavs haven't scored more than 97 in any game. And again, you know, Jared Allen is really the only Cavalier guy that I would say is overachieving in this series. The rest of them have been, you know, Donovan Mitchell, I know, has been kind of meh. You know, same with Darius Garland, although Orlando's guards are nothing either. So those two guys are still probably outplaying Orlando's guards. But, you know, the bigs for Orlando, I mean, you know, if they have a good game in game five, this thing might be over in six.
Here's a quick thing on Cleveland, and to Bruce's point. Second half of this series, Cleveland's averaging 37 points a half. It's 37 points in the second half of games. Now, here's the other thing. They're shooting terribly. In game four, they had two offensive rebounds. Two. They haven't done that. That's the fewest they've had in over 5 years, regular season or playoffs. How can you be that bad of a shooting team and come away with two offensive rebounds? I mean, that's inexcusable. This is what happened, I mentioned earlier, in the Knicks series last year. They got killed on the offensive glass, or, you know, in their case, the defensive glass. But that's just inexcusable if you want to win a series.
Yeah, that's heart and hustle for sure there. And one glimmer of hope for Orlando, too, that could certainly make them scary. I know it's a guy that we've talked about, obviously had a sluggish shooting season. But Franz Wagner, if he is found his stroke here at the most important time of the season. I mean, 39 minutes of play, 34 points, 13 of 17 from the field, including 2 of 3 from downtown. If he can bring that in game five, I'm right there with you, Willby. This would be a game five where I think Orlando could move ahead 3-2.
He was a 20-point per game, or just under 20 points per game during the regular season, so he is productive in that regard. He was the worst three-point shooter in the NBA this season. Among all the ones that took at least 300 threes, he shot like 28% from three. So to see him get anything productive-wise from long range is really gravy for Orlando Magic. And, yeah, I agree that he had a huge game because Banchero, once again, struggled for the third time in four games. He did not look good in this series.
Really quick point, because I know you want to move on, Ross. The two guys that the Cavaliers brought in the offseason that were going to sort of bolster them in the playoffs, Max Strus and George Niang. Max Strus has been ice cold. He's 18% from downtown, okay? George Niang is 9% from downtown. Ooh. 23% overall from the floor. So those two guys have been huge disappointments in this series. And if one of them can have a good game, you know, maybe Cleveland can kind of, you know, put their nose in front a little bit. But those two guys have just been absolutely disasters for Cleveland.
Great point there, Bruce. And as we shift our attention out west, boy, do we have a series between the Dallas Mavericks and LA Clippers. This one also squared up at two games apiece. Big game five coming up. Bruce, I'll start with you. Obviously, this has been kind of a roller coaster type series. You know, you take one, we'll take one. Not a lot of battling down the stretch as we might have imagined with clutch plays. But this one, you know, it's turned into a three-game series. Who's going to win two of three, Bruce?
You know, considering that this series features no fewer than six future Hall of Famers, okay? Yep. Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Luka, and Kyrie. All six of those guys are likely going to make it into the Basketball Hall of Fame at some point. This series has not provided compelling basketball. You know, two of the lowest scoring teams in the playoffs. Luka and Kyrie are putting up their numbers, but Luka's under 39% from the floor. Kyrie's been awesome. I mean, he's been fantastic for those guys. I don't know. I mean, I picked the Clippers to win the series. But honestly, you know, I just it's just been non-compelling to me. I mean, I really have been like, eh. I mean, this is like a nothing performance by these teams. I mean, I don't know. Am I tripping here?
I don't think you are, World B. What's your thoughts on this? I mean, we watched this on playback last week. That was one of our highlighted games there. And we noted how sloppy that one was. And it seems to have continued since that game.
Well, I mean, the signature moment until Sunday was Russell Westbrook getting into it with everybody in game three. So that was that's, I guess, in a way, kind of tells you what you need to know about this series. But I thought Sunday's game was about as enjoyable from the time it got to be a 31-point lead from the Clippers as you can get. Watching the Mavericks come back, and finally take the lead. And watching Kyrie Irving, you remember all the garbage that we had to deal with during his Brooklyn days, all that other stuff, and it was all garbage. And, you know, whatever criticisms he get and his reputation, it's on him. He made his bed as far as that goes. But this was a reminder of just what an incredible player he is. He was unbelievable to watch. In that, as they tried to make that comeback from the outside in the paint, he's as, you know, they mentioned in the broadcast, he's maybe the best finisher of all time. And I'm not going to be one to say, you know, to think about, you know, off the top of my head, who knows, I'd have to think about it. But boy, he's got to be in the conversation, if nothing else. He was absolutely outstanding. And they lost this game because Paul George made a miraculous three pointer when all the momentum was going against him. So I'm more intrigued than you guys are in this series, but yeah, it took a game like yesterday or Sunday, excuse me, to really pique our interest.
Hey Russ, Kawhi Leonard's missed two games. The two games he played, the Clippers lost. The two games he missed, the Clippers won. So
I was about to ask you the same question. What's going on with Kawhi? Do you even bring him back? My answer to that, Bruce, is no. I think he's not fully healthy. Let him rest up. Hopefully you can get through this first series. But I think when he's out there, he's kind of just throwing a curveball into the chemistry of everything. I mean, he's there. He's not there. He disappears. He's back. And he's just one of those players when he's out on the floor. And, I mean, it makes sense. But when the ball's in his hand, he's ultra aggressive, looking to get his shots. And he makes a lot of those shots. But if he's not fully healthy and he's not consistent, and then you throw him back out there, it kind of throws off the rhythm of everybody else. And I think they need to ride the guys that have been playing throughout the playoffs. And one I want to give credit to, which will certainly please will be here, James Harden. He had a heck of a game on Sunday. 33 points, 12-7 shooting, 40 minutes. I mean, we got a classic Harden game, didn't we, Will B?
Well, here's the thing. I was just going to tag along before you made that comment. It's fine if you want Kawhi Leonard to sit. And you, the points you made are fine. But as we go further in this series, that means we're expecting James Harden to carry this offensive load. And his track record, we all know, the further along in the series we go, it's not exactly stellar. Is that a nice way to put it? So if you want Kawhi to sit, that's fine. But then you better be counting on James Harden to produce, do something he doesn't do very often. And that's come through in the playoff series late.
You know, one of the guys that we don't always give a whole lot of credit to is Ivica Zubac. He's totally outplayed the two Dallas bigs in this series. I mean, he's averaging, you know, like 16 and just under 10 boards. And, you know, Lively and Gafford, I mean, you know, he's like, you know, he's beaten that tag team to shreds. And Gafford, oh, by the way, remember when Gafford hit like 1,000 shots in a row during the regular season and he was shooting like 107% from the floor? 38% from the floor in this series, which is about half of what his field goal percentage was during the regular season. So Zubac is, you know, holding his own against that tag team.
Which he should. He's much better than those two guys, you know, if we really break it down. He I agree with you, Bruce. He's having a good series, much better than those two, but he's supposed to.
Yeah, that's true.
And Zubac likes to initiate the physical contact. The other two guys on Dallas do not like the contact. They like to work around in space, obviously leading to Gafford almost on historic levels of not missing a field goal. He likes to operate with easy dump-off passes and easy dunks. Zubac likes to throw the elbow into your chest and take some hook shots. So I don't think that the Dallas bigs are really matching that intensity that Zubac brings, and that could be a real big difference maker in this series. Now let's go ahead and get to our lightning round. This is a series of playoff-related questions. Going to have some fun here. Bruce, I'll start with you. And question number one, who's been your most impressive player in the playoffs so far?
I got to go with the Joker. In the first four games against the Lakers, he's averaged a triple-double, 29 points, over 15 boards, 10 assists. All three of those numbers are better than his regular season numbers. Just under 60% from the floor, almost 93% from the line. And he's like a metronome, you know. If you ever, like, played the piano, you see, like, a metronome. He goes at his own pace. You can never speed him up. You can never really affect him. He's routinely unbelievable. The best in the business.
That's a great case right there. World B, who's been your most impressive player in the playoffs?
For me, it's Jalen Brunson, and it's not really the whole series because we all know he had first two games were lousy. Let's just call it what it was. But, you know, you're in New York and you have back-to-back bad playoff games. The pressure gets on you, and then how does he respond? His last two games, 86 points, 23 assists combined, and game four, he touched the ball 100 times in that game, one turnover. And that's somebody along with a billion shots, which we know 61 shots in those last two games. But that's pretty impressive. He needed to step up. New York had the spotlight on him, and he stepped up.
No question about it. As for my most impressive player, I got to go with Anthony Edwards, 22 years old, just led his team to a sweep over Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Bradley Beal. I said it before this series, and I'll confirm it now. Anthony Edwards just surpassed both Kevin and Devin in terms of overall player rankings. Of course, it was always trending this way, but arguably it could have already been done. But this absolutely secures his rank in my mind as far as being ahead of those guys in the top tier there. And outside of the obvious performances over the course of this series, I somehow was still left more impressed with how Edwards handled each and every post-game press conference by electing to commend his teammates for the team's success. That's true leadership, and leadership is something Phoenix lacked throughout the season from top to bottom and came back to haunt them, and got to credit the Ant-Man with all his leadership throughout round one. All right, World B, I'll start with you on question number two. Who's been your most disappointing player in the playoffs so far?
Donovan Mitchell. I mean, he's a guy who's been impressive in two seasons with the Cavaliers, and he gets to the postseason and he just doesn't have it. We thought last season was a fluke, and we're starting to find out maybe it's not a fluke. He's just last three games, just 4 of 20 on three-pointers and 25% on threes for the series. You go back his last three postseasons, going back to his final season with Utah and then the two seasons with Cleveland, 24.8% combined on three-pointers. There's something not – he's not becoming that clutch player, and he wants to be courted here coming up in the offseason. Those numbers are not good right now.
No question about it. Bruce?
It pains me to say this because I actually like him a lot and think he's one of the best guys in the league. Tobias Harris of the Sixers averaged 17 points during the regular season, averaging 8.8 against the Knicks. Under 40% shooting, 25% from downtown. Regular season, he was 35% from downtown. Not great, but a heck of a lot better than what he's shown. You know, rebounding numbers are okay in the playoffs. He's averaging, you know, over 7, and during the regular season, he was a little over 6. But he's done next to nothing to help out Embiid and Maxey, and he's my guy.
I feel like most Philly fans would probably agree with you. They don't seem to give that guy much credit. So
they do not like him in Philly. Yeah.
As for mine, I'm going to go with the Suns guards, and I'm actually leaving KD out of this because he handled his business all season long, logging heavy minutes while remaining healthy, and I've got no beef with how he performed in the playoffs. But Devin Booker and Brad Beal. Let's start with Devin Booker. In the final week of the season, the Suns were blown out by the Clippers at home, which included a first quarter in which they were outscored by 27 points and just put up 10 points for the quarter. When asked about that loss post-game, Devin Booker responded, "Chillin', another chance tomorrow." And now fast forward to falling behind 0-2 against Minnesota, Booker, when asked about the deficit, replied, "Don't count us out. It's a series for a reason." Brad Beal, let me start out with this quote. "I've never been swept a day in my life, so I'll be damned if that happens." And he went on to score 9 points on 4-13 shooting in 31 minutes in game 4 when the Suns dropped and got swept in the series. So the Suns can blame Frank Vogel's coaching staff and leadership all they want, but I think the Suns' backcourt in particular should look inward. They talked all the talk but had no walk. So that would do it for that one. Now, next question for you here, Bruce. Which team has a brighter future? Would you say it's the Phoenix Suns or the Milwaukee Bucks?
Can I say none of the above? I'm gonna probably give a slight edge to the Bucks, but I think both could drop off significantly in the next 2 years. Their situations with their superstars' contract situations are actually fairly similar. Booker's signed for 4 more years beyond this. Giannis is signed for 4 more years. Beal signed for 3 more years after this. Dame is signed for 3 more years after this. KD's got 2 more after this. But here's why I think the Bucks have a slightly better future than the Suns. The Western Conference is tougher. Yeah. There's going to be more competition that the Phoenix has to fight through to move up in the standings. Whereas I think the Bucks, as long as they can stay reasonably healthy, should not be worse than third in the Eastern Conference next year if everybody sort of comes back as is. So slight edge to Milwaukee, but not loving either of the two, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's kind of like the shortest midget contest right now between those two teams. World B?
I think the future looks brighter for the Bucks. Bruce mentioned the biggest thing for me, the dysfunction of both franchises right now is probably on equal footing. If you go all the way back from the beginning of before the season, there's equal dysfunction, both areas. I do think the fact that Giannis health is the biggest thing for Milwaukee. If Giannis is healthy and can stay healthy, that gives them a decided edge over a team like Phoenix Suns. And I agree with Bruce, where's Phoenix going in the West? Oklahoma City's not going away. Minnesota's not going away. Denver's not going away. So now you're at best, you're looking at fourth, if at best. And there's a lot to be said that there's a lot of teams coming up we haven't talked about in months. Memphis without Ja Morant. What happens when he gets back and those players get back? There's Houston. A lot to deal with in Phoenix right Houston. Now with personnel along with the rest of the Western Conference. I agree with Bruce. It's the Bucks.
Yep, and I am going to echo that as well. I got the Milwaukee Bucks. They have an undoubted top 5 player in the game on their team. The Suns do not. And just to keep it simple here, if it boils down to one arguably bad star contract moving forward, as that contract ages, as that player ages, I'll still easily take Damian Lillard over Bradley Beal every day of the week and twice on Sunday. So pretty easy for me there. I'm taking the Bucks. Now, next question is an interesting one. Will we ever see KD in the finals again? World B, I'll start with you.
No, I don't think so. I think this is for a number of reasons, but if he's stuck in Phoenix, I don't see it going anywhere. If he forces his way out somewhere, I don't know who's going to take him, first of all, at this stage of his career and his reputation being what it is. So I don't see it going. This is his stuff. If he can get Phoenix going again and get them, more power to him. I just don't see it.
All right. Bruce?
Nope. Next.
All right. Well, I think he will, because I think he can force his way out. And I think Kevin Durant could get to a place that he's familiar with. It could be Golden State or Oklahoma City that could ante up the picks or the young guys. So I'm not counting out Kevin Durant just because he always finds a way to slither himself out of bad situations. So I think we'll see him in the finals again. All right, Bruce, next guy. Will we ever see LeBron James in the finals again?
If he goes to another team, I'll say perhaps. But otherwise, I think he's done playing in the NBA Finals.
All right, World B?
I think we're going to see one more go-around for him in the Finals. Even if he stays with the Lakers, they're going to have to do something major reconstruction there in a year or two. Because that's basically what it is. When you say yes, like I do, you're saying the next season or two, he's going to make it to the finals. If he doesn't stay in L.A., he's going to go somewhere else. He could end up, why not go back to Miami? And go east, and all of a sudden, LeBron James, with his production, 20 seasons at 25 points per game, going to an Eastern Conference team, that gives him a shot to make the finals again. It's a long one, but I can see it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of questions with this one. I mean, the honest answer is it depends. I mean, will he accept a career decline to go somewhere else? You know, will he stick around and do a complete role change as he continues to age, or is he going to shut it down and, you know, restore his career numbers? I mean, I think there's a lot of questions that are in regards to that. But what the one thing I can say is he's definitely not going back to the finals with the Los Angeles Lakers for the same reasons the Suns have some issues. There's a lot of teams in the West that are going to either continue to be good, or teams on the come up like Memphis, like Houston. So I don't see LeBron James getting to a finals with the Los Angeles Lakers. All right, Bruce, last one. Steph Curry, will he see a finals appearance again?
I'm not ready to close the door on Steph making the finals one more time, because there are some young dudes in Golden State that could be the core of a good young rising team. And Steph seems like one of those guys. He's still pretty much, you know, in his prime at an advanced age. So I think, you know, if guys like Kuminga, Trayce Jackson-Davis, our buddy Brandon Pajemski, and, you know, Kevon Looney still around, maybe get someone to sign as a free agent, as you said, maybe Kevin Durant, maybe someone else. I'm going to say I could see him making the finals one more time.
All right, Will B?
I don't. Certainly, I think he's a warrior for the rest of his career, and which is great. I think he is, obviously, we saw this year, he's still a really productive player and still a 20-point-per-night guy, still 40-some-odd percent from deep. I don't see what the Warriors getting. Bruce is right. They have a young core that has potential to be good. I don't see that potential getting them over the hump over the other teams in the West.
Yep. Yeah, I don't see Curry wanting to leave Golden State, and of course the Warriors would be crazy to move him. I think Curry's fate on seeing another finals is into the hands of the Warriors front office. How can they get creative and bring in some pieces to fit around him as he continues to age? Who can come in and help him? Obviously, I think Kevin Durant would make a lot of sense with the Golden State Warriors if they're willing to give up a guy like Jonathan Kuminga and some future assets, but you know, I think if the roster stays as it stands now, even with Kuminga developing, there's just too many good teams out West, and I would say Curry does not make another final. Now, to close out the show here real quickly, as I know we are in overtime, The Pelicans just lost to the Thunder at home. The Thunder win 97-89. So that's a wrap on that series as the Pelicans become the second team to go fishing, or gone fishing, as TNT likes to say. And this series certainly didn't go like I expected it to. Bruce, obviously the Pelicans were a team we hyped up all year, kind of being unnoticed, and they went ahead and kind of went unnoticed in the playoffs, didn't they?
Well, look, this series ended before it even began when Zion Williamson was injured in the play-in tournament. True. There was no way that they were going to be beating Oklahoma City if they didn't have their best player. Okay. Trey Murphy moved into the starting lineup, but that thinned out the bench for Willie Green because Murphy was playing like, 42 minutes a game. He played 42 minutes in game four. They were right to form. I mean, the Pels scored 89 in game four. That's exactly what they averaged in the series. OKC caught a break with no Zion. So now they're going to move on, and they're going to end up playing. Who are they going to play? They're going to play the number four. So they're going to play the winner of the Mavericks Clippers, okay?
Yeah.
They'll be challenged, obviously, a little bit more in that series. But this one was like, it was over before it began, unfortunately. Sorry, New Orleans.
Yeah. World B, any thoughts on, the funeral for the Pelicans here tonight?
Well, it wasn't a big surprise. We thought it would be a little more competitive. I don't know what sweep was predicted, but I've mentioned over and over again, two teams this year, top five in offensive and defensive efficiency. One is Boston, the best team in the league. The other is Oklahoma City, arguably the second best team in the league. So, they know how to do it and shut it down. I'll tell you what, I put Donovan Mitchell as my most disappointing player. I could have easily done Brandon Ingram. He came up small when they needed him. I mean, he was, game four tonight, he was in Monday, 2 of 14 from the field and 8 points. When your season on the line, you can't do better than that. And that was the whole series too, by the way. It wasn't just tonight. He just did not have it. I don't know how healthy he was, but something wasn't right because he was a major disappointment.
Yeah, he said, Ingram said, Brad Beal, hold my beer real quick. Let me go out here and have a nice game four for you. So I'm definitely rooting for the Clippers now that Oklahoma City went ahead and finalized things against the Pels. I'd love to see SGA try to get revenge against his former ball club. That could be a lot of fun. And the back and forth pace of that one should be one to look forward to. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. And before we close out our 100th episode, the Lakers do hold a 3-point halftime lead in Denver. So we might have some fun things to discuss here on the show next week for episode number 101. But for this edition, that will do it. I want to thank all our fans and listeners that support the show here. We wouldn't have made it to 100 without you, and to all our special guests as well for making this show so special. So with that, that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. Thanks for tuning in as always, and we'll be sure to keep you up to date in 48 on all things around the association moving forward. Take care, everybody.